Barbara Hine speaking from Cape Dorset in the southwest corner of Baffin Island, where Jim Houston, who founded the Eskimo Art Center here, is stationed for the Department of Northern Affairs and Natural Resources. His wife, Ellie, is also a very busy person in this small settlement, and they both have been living here in the region of 10 years. Mrs. Houston, how long ago did you arrive here?
We first arrived in the winter of 1951, and then we stayed several months, 9 months, I think, went south, and after that came back each year for a while. And then we returned again in 1957 with two children we'd had in the meantime, and we've been living here since then.
How did you first arrive if you came in the winter? Did you come in by plane?
We flew into Goose Bay, and from there to Frobisher Bay, and from Frobisher Bay to Cape Dorset by dog team.
How long did it take you to come overland then by dog team, Mrs. Houston?
Altogether, about, I think it was about 30 days, but we did stop off at Lake Harbor for a while, so it was broken up into two trips, one of a little over a week, and the other one something like 3 weeks.
How do you make a roof or a shelter for yourself overnight when you're traveling by a dog team?
Well, first of all, I'm no expert in this, but I would suggest always travel with Eskimos, and they take care of you. They build a snow house every night, and it takes them less than an hour to put up an adequate shelter. And if the snow conditions aren't good enough, you have to pitch a tent, and that's not so pleasant. But a snow house has a very pleasant quality of lovely light, and it's soundproof and windproof, and that's the best way to stay.
So you certainly had quite an introduction to the North then, didn't you, if you immediately started to live in a snow house when traveling by a dog team?
Well, yes, I remember one time we'd been on the trail for 3 weeks or something like that. Sitting there, wasn't the first time I'd wandered either, but sitting there wondering what on earth I was doing in such a place at such a time. And I realized even then that if I had known in advance what the trip was like, I probably wouldn't have done it. But it was... I'm very happy that we did start out that way. And later, when we got to Cape Dorset, we lived in the Eskimo camps and in a tent as they were living, or in the snow house as they were living. And it's not the same now that we have a house and live in the settlement. Of course, with children, it wouldn't have been possible to do the other thing anyway. But that part of our living in the North, we have great many fond memories of that, and of course got to know the people, I think, rather better than we could have if we had started out living in a community with other English-speaking people. Mm. At that time, Jim used to go hunting with the people a lot, and I was left alone in the camp for a day or a week or whatever it happened to be, and not another person in the camp speaking a word of English. So of course I had to learn to speak Eskimo of sorts, and that too helped a great deal to get to know the people a little better.
Did you find it a difficult language to learn?
Well, I must say that I am able to make myself understood, and I can understand just about anything they say to me, but I couldn't possibly say that I have learned the language. Mm. It's a very rich language, and I speak badly. My two children speak beautifully. I would say it's a difficult language to learn, very difficult to learn to speak it fluently. I would say, though, that the Eskimo people are so helpful and so anxious to have you learn that it is quite easy to get a working knowledge of it. Mm-hmm. if you don't mind speaking rather bad Eskimo.
You must have experienced quite a variation in diet during your period here. Have you noticed a lot of difference, not only in your own diet, but in your influence on the Eskimo people, too?
Yes, it's a bit different from diet one would have down south. In the first place, we eat almost all of the country food, the meats the country produces, the seal meat and various, the char, of course, the fish is absolutely marvelous, as you know,
mm-hmm.
and the seal liver, anyone can eat. Seal meat takes a bit of getting used to for some people, but we like it. Then there are the birds and clams and various other kinds of food, and most from the sea. And we eat very little walrus meat because they go off on the hunt for perhaps 2 weeks. And by the time they get back with the walrus, it usually isn't in a perfect state for eating. But the Eskimos eat everything from the walrus down to the clam. And as we were mentioning, the clams, except for summertime, are usually found in the stomach of the walrus. So
are they still in the shell?
No.
No, the walrus has pried them open.
The walrus has pried them open and got rid of the shell.
Yeah.
And I think they must pry them open with their tusk. I must say I don't know, but I think they do. And the Eskimos say this mixture of the gastric juices and the clams and the seaweed and other things the walrus has eaten, they say it's delicious, but I haven't had the courage to try, because as I say, we never get a really fresh walrus here anyway.
Tell me, what do they do for greens here, our equivalent of greens?
Very little, of course. I think many people have said this, but Dr. Stephenson was telling me at one time that while the people ate only raw meat, fresh raw meat, they seem to get, that is the sea mammals anyway, they seem to get all their requirements from the meat. They didn't need vegetables or anything else. Once it's cooked or stored for a long time, this changes. But
the fresh meat is
the fresh meat mm-hmm. apparently contains
all the vitamins.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Apparently, in the past, when many people came here, including dentists for the first time, visiting remote, isolated Eskimo places, found that their teeth were excellent. And their health was generally very good, perhaps better than it is now. Certainly the teeth were, because they were living on this this high-protein diet with no sugars or starches. Nowadays, they do have trade goods, foods imported from the south, unfortunately, for them and for us. Most all the food we get here from the south is in tins or dehydrated. And sometimes they don't choose very wisely. Sometimes the foods like fresh eggs, vegetables, fresh fruits, well, they just aren't available. They can't be bought. And so there is a tendency to live on flour and tea and a little jam. This isn't so true of Cape Dorset as it is of other places, because it is a very good area for game. But it does happen in certain seasons in the winter, particularly December and January. There are very few seals, or perhaps the seals are there, but ice conditions or weather won't allow the Eskimo to get them, and so they just have to live on something else. And that is why we feel that we have to teach the local women more about our imported foods and how to cook them. Their own foods, they prepare delicious meals from the birds and the seals, and they make a blood soup, and which is very good. It doesn't sound good, but it is. And they know how to do these things. And speaking of greens, as you were, the first thing in the spring when there's open water at the flow edge, the women are urging the men to please bring back some seaweed, kwani they call it. And they have to do some searching to find it. And when they bring it home, the women blanch it. They pour boiling water over it and drain it. They do this twice, The seaweed turns from a rather dull, dark, uninteresting green to a bright emerald green that looks and is delicious. And it's even better when you add some good French dressing, which some of the women here have now learned to make. And other greens, there are a few little plants on the land that as they come along, the people, you see everyone out eating these little plants. And we have, of course, puff balls and various other things growing here that you can eat, and we do. The Eskimos in the past didn't eat the puff balls, but of course they're not very good unless they're cooked, and of course they didn't know about cooking them. Now they like them very much.
You have conducted some cookery courses here, I believe, and established a bakery. And I'm so pleased to see that you have whole wheat flour, which I'm sure is so much better for them.
Well, we're very strong on the whole grain flours and cereals, and we had a wonderful opportunity teaching them, introducing all new kinds of cooking, and of course simply arbitrarily had only whole wheat flours and oatmeals and all the various things that are good for them. And we can think of other things that we could make, but of course we just haven't done it. We stick to rice puddings with lots of powdered milk and dried eggs and raisins in them. And as you were mentioning, the whole wheat flour, we have some rye flour now, which will make a little more variety. And we've been making a sort of a brown bread with oatmeal and molasses and cornmeal and all sorts of things in it. One slice of it is just about like a meal. And the baked beans, of course, in winter, they haven't been able to do much with the white beans that they get at the store because they haven't ovens, but with the oven. And as a matter of fact, when I come back from the south this time, to teach them a lot more about pressure cookery, because you can do baked beans in a pressure cooker in about 45 minutes, and it's a great... Well, it saves fuel, and also the Eskimos, and I'm getting to be more and more like this myself, don't often think 8 hours in advance about something like beans. You do put them to soak overnight, but to get them in the oven and have them there all day seems a bit much. So I think that, like myself, they would... cook a lot more beans if they had pressure cookers to cook them in.
What do they use for fuel? Do they use seal oil or naphtha gas?
They use seal oil in their lamps, and of course in the past there was always a meat pot hanging over the lamp, and all the cooking, or such cooking as was done in this way. The flame is very adequate for light, and it's good for heating the low, steady heat in their house. But it isn't good for cooking, really. It takes too long. So some, of course, the wonderful Swedish Primus stove, we couldn't live without. They use that, and there you have a single burner. And it's a good hot flame, and they use that. But that still doesn't provide an oven, of course. And there are only two or three people who have proper kitchen ranges with ovens in them.
When the CD Howe comes in and they have their annual X-ray checkup for tuberculosis, have you noticed any difference during the period of years you've been here, whether they've got any healthier or less healthier?
Very definitely. This is one of the things that we can point to with pride. I think that the health and welfare people department have really done a great deal. When I first came to Cape Dorset, well, that was 1951, and the C.D. Howe had been in here one summer previously in 1950. There were many people were taken out to hospital, but it wasn't just the numbers. These people were often advanced cases of very sick people who just weren't going to ever going to come back. But many of them didn't come back. But they were, of course... living in small houses, one room with their whole families, And, of course, the families were becoming infected, so there was a great help to have that removed. And as the years have passed, we see fewer people going. And, of course, there's no one, hardly ever is there one who is an advanced case now. The number of people going out to hospital each year has decreased. Only five, I think, went this year, and that means a great deal more than it seems to, too, because these people who went away were not very sick. In fact, last year, several people were taken out who were simply, their X-ray plates looked a little bit suspicious, and they were returned within 3 months. And the equipment is excellent, and also locally, the local nursing station has an X-ray machine, and if someone is ill in the winter, perhaps a case of flu or occasionally pneumonia or any of these things, any respiratory troubles, they're X-rayed, and if the X-ray is sent out and read outside, and then the people can be sent right away. They don't have to wait until the how comes around. And generally, it has really improved enormously. There are figures on it, percentages, I don't know them.
Tell me what your other duties are here, apart from teaching them cookery and sort of domestic science to the women. What else do you do, Mrs. Houston?
Well, I seem to get myself involved in just about everything that's going on. The main things I have been doing are the cooking course. Well, that falls into two categories. One, we had a cooking course, a formal one that lasted 7 weeks this spring. And this was to teach some of the young people to cook for visiting scientists and tourists and visitors who occasionally come for a period of weeks and need a cook, and now they won't have to bring one with them. And the other thing is just generally teaching the housewives and the people in our little bakery to cook. That's the cooking part. The sewing has taken more time. We've been doing that for 3 or 4 years. That was my work before when I came up here originally. My husband and I were working under a grant from the federal government, and my job was to buy handicrafts from the women. And so we've been continuing that, making parkas and boots and socks, and you've noticed how excellent the hand sewing is, the sinew sewing, and also the dressmaking. We have one young woman who was out in Ottawa with us last time and who had took a dressmaking course out there, and she's teaching the young women to make clothes for themselves, a little more stylish than the ones they'd been making in the past, and of better materials so they last longer. And she's done exceptionally well at that.
These kamiks, these sealskin boots, are the most remarkable piece of footwear, aren't they? They're so supple.
Yes, I think the skin boot is simply marvelous for this country. We wear them all winter. And, of course, in the summer, if you go out on a boat for hunting all day and you can put on a pair of skin boots with some duffel socks under, your feet will remain warm. But in the summer, on the rocks, perhaps the soft sole is a little bit much for most people until you get used to it. I think they're simply wonderful boots, and I'm very pleased that here in Cape Dorset, the boots are every bit as good, as well made as they were in the past. They haven't lost that art because, of course, they're wearing the boots all the time themselves. And a woman in this community, I've explained to them when we were teaching them cooking that it's very important to a housewife outside to be able to cook. And they understood that. They said that in their society that a woman, it's very important that she be able to sew. And usually you find that the best hunters have, their wives are the best sewers, and they've chosen them partly for that reason.
I believe also, Mrs. Houston, you're the postmistress.
No, I'm the postmaster. And I really can't get used to being called postmaster, but Mr. Ernest Clark, who was the postmaster on the C.D. Howe and the inspector and supervisor of the post offices in the Eastern Arctic Patrol, was very firm on that point. He said, there just aren't any postmistresses in Canada, so you're a postmaster.
And then he swore you in.
And then he swore me in, and then I was perplexed. I had an application form here to fill out, and there was a blank for where you fill in the sex, and I couldn't resist asking him which I should fill in with a title like that.
And he told you what?
He said, it's up to you.
Mrs. Houston, this has developed into the art center, hasn't it, of the Arctic. Have you had any influence at all on this, or is it entirely your husband's work?
Oh, I don't think I have had any effect whatever. I certainly, it's like really like living in a most exciting art place. I do get to see the prints and the carvings. I sometimes, before the whole series is printed, they show them to me and ask me if I like them, and I'm very pleased to be in on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in the printing of materials, which they haven't done much of that yet, but you've seen the drapes in our house and a few other pieces of material that have been printed, scarves and so on. I don't think I've had any effect on that side of it.
If they do go into printing cloth commercially, will you export it, because these designs are so beautiful?
That is the hope, of course. We like to produce the crafts here and sell them locally and in the South. Many reasons, of course. Economics, so suppose the first one, most important one. But we forget all about that side of it when we're actually producing. The Eskimos don't think much about money or worry about it, of course. And we get all involved with these wonderful designs and ideas that we have, and we must remember that that's the purpose behind it, is to allow us to improve the local economy. We, our people in Dorset haven't been moving off to bigger centers as some other Eskimos from other places have. And I think it's partly because of all this activity. It's really an exciting place. The Eskimos here seem to have it isn't an excitement. It's a sort of, well, it reminds me a bit when Rasmussen asked some Eskimos about their religion, their old religion, long ago in the 20s. He said, what do you believe? And he was told, we do not believe, we fear. And they had this saying, which is used all the time, ayonamut, which means it can't be helped. And they accepted a great many things, which that's very good, but many things that they needn't have accepted. And now there's a little bit more optimism and faith, and I think a great deal more interest in the outside world. Partly, one young man went to Greenland last summer, saw how the people there were living, had a lovely time, of course, and he was impressed by their homes. Eskimos here, the housing isn't as good as it might be, and there are many reasons for it, partly lack of materials and that. Partly because they have been never a nomadic people, but a sort of semi-nomadic people, people who have had summer, one place to live in the summer and another place in the winter and move off to the better hunting grounds in the spring. And of course, if you keep moving, you just don't seem to establish a nice home. And Kanungina, who went to Greenland, saw there people who had been living in one house for a generation or two. And he was most impressed. He's very artistic, and now he has ordered materials, and I think they probably have arrived, and he will have a house, and he's going to have great fun decorating it, because he's been making pictures for his walls at the craft center, making little prints for himself, and he's done Oh, I think he's printed a couple of lengths of skirt material for his wife, and he's thinking about his curtains and so on now. So it is exciting, and we have more people in the community because of more employment. And in the past, they used to say here that it wasn't good to have too many Eskimos living in one place because they didn't get along. Well, I think they're getting along beautifully, and they're changing a little bit, of course. They're going to the school. We're very fortunate. We've been having a good teacher here, a girl who has been working with the children during the day and the adults in the evening, and she has a large attendance. They've had something going on practically every evening of the week, separate classes for teenagers and for the older people, and even gymnastics and so on. They've had a very good program, and all of the people are very anxious to learn, not just to speak English, but to be able to read and be able to take advantage of more, knowing more about the rest of Canada. They're very conscious of the fact that they are Canadians, and of course they're very much interested in the thought, the idea of the Queen, and all these things. They don't understand as much as they might about government, but they're learning. They're learning about cooperatives, and I think that the whole idea of cooperatives is just about the best one that's ever been thought of in this country. It fits in with their society very well because they've always cooperated with each other. They've had to, and it looks very bright for the future.
Yes, well, Mrs. Houston, I believe you're going on a holiday in the next day or two, and I sure wish you a wonderful holiday. And thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Yes, I think tomorrow we'll be on our way south for a little while. We'll be back in the winter. And I'm looking forward to going south, and I'm already looking forward to coming back.
Thank you.